Angela Cherby, Fred Film Radio. We are still in Berlin at the Berlinale 2015, and we have a very dear guy with us today, Mark Christopher, director of 54, the Director's Cut. Hello, Mark. How are you?
I'm good, Angelo. So great to see you again after all these years.
I know. Well, listen, we want to talk about what is the main difference between 54 first and 54 second, you know, and what happened with 54 first. What is the story with Miramax and the final cut you did and the final cut that was not accepted and that blah blah.
Right. Okay, so the main difference between the movie that came out, the studio cut, and the movie, the 54, the director's cut, is that the studio cut basically cut the director's cut in half. And then, so they took out 40 minutes. We did 30 minutes of reshoots that were an entirely different story. It was a love story between the Nev Campbell character and the Ryan Phillippe character. And they cut out the whole love triangle between Selma Hayek, Ryan Phillippe, and Breckin Meyer, which was the original story. So now in the director's cut, we've cut out those reshoots and restored the love triangle. So it's much more than a director's cut. It's actually a different movie because it's a different story.
Completely, completely.
Yeah. Yeah. And then also the music, you know, we've got to, I've had more time to work with the music. There's that. And very importantly, the film is much darker in its look. When the studio released the movie, they pumped a bunch of light into it, and it didn't really work for the effect that the director of photography and I were going for, which was to light the club very dark, and you would experience it in flashes of light and color, which is actually very difficult to do. And my director of photography, Alexander Grudzinski, did a fabulous job, and we would call him the second Prince of Darkness. And
For that reason,
yes. And most people think the first Prince of Darkness is the Lucifer, but it was actually Gordon Willis who lit The Godfather. He's the first Prince of Darkness. Alexander's the second, and did a wonderful job. And so when the light was pumped into it, that was, you know, it changed the movie completely also, because I'd never really seen a movie where you experienced it in that sort of way. And what's been so wonderful in restoring this cut is that we've been able to go back to that beautiful, dark, you know, luscious-looking movie where you feel like you're in that club.
What happened once you were given like the green light from Miramax to do this director's cut? What did you have to do? How did you find out all the dailies, the rough cuts, the material that you have to recover in order to have your final version?
Okay, so there were basically three of us who did this restoration, and that's very important. It's not just another movie. It is a restoration of a 17-year-old movie. So hunting down the negative was extremely difficult. I have this fabulous post-production supervisor who's also the associate producer named Nancy Valley, who we nicknamed the goddess because she could do most anything. And she hunted down the negative. It was in, you know, it was, you know, difficult to find after all this time. And but the problem with doing this was there was never really a finished director's cut. There was only something that I had cobbled together from various video sources. And so there was no edit decision list. And so there were no time codes. And that made it impossible to go back to the negative and find the shots. And this, we're talking 40 minutes of shots.
Yeah.
That's a lot of material. So we needed to find the dailies. And so Nancy was crawling around a 90-degree warehouse in the summertime, and she finally found our VHS dailies that were all shrink-wrapped on a giant pallet, and they were marked with signs all around it, to be destroyed. And which makes sense because nobody keeps their VHS dailies. It's an old, you know, format, and they degrade, and who would want to keep them? But if she hadn't found them that day, there would be no director's cut because we needed those to get the time code to, we needed those in order to get the time code, so that the negative could be pulled and then we could restore the movie.
So basically she ran She went through all the warehouses of Miramax all over the places, basically, to find that. And once you found those dailies on VHS, which was the process to do in order to make them usable?
Okay, so then the daily. So then my editor, David Kittredge, who tirelessly had to do his job now, had to take. We had that bootleg cut that existed. And so he had to eye match. He had to take the dailies, go through all the dailies we shot of 40 days, and then he had to match by eye each shot and slide it into place from the VHS dailies on top of the bootleg cut. And then that VHS daily gave the time code. And then he could give the time codes to Nancy, who then had to go to Photochem, our lab, and reel through negative, looking through very dark. And as I said, this was shot very dark, through very dark negative, to find all the shots. And also, this is what's very important, too. It wasn't just easy, like finding full shots and camera rolls. There were actual trims. So in other words, in the studio cut, they would trim off pieces of a shot, like a reaction shot from Ryan, for instance, that was very important for his character, and it would be trimmed. And so we needed to find these trims that some were just, let's say, a second long, maybe 2 seconds long. And she found so many of those, and that really, really enhances his performance. Now, some of them we didn't find, so sadly there are a few magic moments of Ryan we don't have, but she found, I'd say, 90% of all the footage.
In the movie, there are some part of it where the quality is actually different. I mean,
that's so nice of you to say different.
No, it's different. I mean, it's rougher. It's right. Like, but it's the same. I mean, the same sequence that has the bits and pieces in it. How come this happened?
Well, you know, and I got to say, I actually like that look because it has a very underground '70s look, and the reason it has such an underground 70s look is because these were shots where the negative wasn't found. So I found the material underneath my friend's house in the Hollywood Hills on a videotape. So it was literally almost underground.
in any sense.
Yes, exactly. Yes.
Listen, how did you... how long was the process to convince Miramax to let you do this? Because I think it was... I mean, how did it happen that they decided to say yes?
This is what happened. So Jonathan King, my very tireless, loyal, tenacious producer, over the years has been asking Miramax. And, you know, I would bug Jonathan and Jonathan would bug them. And we came close a few times, but then nothing ever seemed to happen. And finally, Zan Devine at the new Miramax said yes. And when she said yes, we went into action. I think that was in June. And then it was pretty much... It was a few months of light work, I think, and then it was 4 months of, you know, 80-hour weeks for Nancy and David and me. It was intense. It was almost harder making the director's cut than it was the feature. Yeah, in a way.
Listen, let's talk about the music. As you had to add new scenes or new sequences, did you have to add music too? So the soundtrack would be the same as the original one, or would be some additional songs in it?
Well, the soundtrack, we're using all of the same songs that are on those CDs and that are in the movie. But some of those songs in the studio cut were squished way down so that you could barely hear them. And I brought them up so that they... had more of a presence, and also use the music to help drive the story forward in a subtle sort of way, and also inform what's going on with the characters in the way that that's done in Saturday Night Fever. And there are some new songs that are like library songs. So there will be, like, when there's a thumping disco beat, you know, that's a library song that, you know, cost a couple $100s. And so, you know, I could pull that song and use it elsewhere. But it was, you know, that was a very difficult job and very satisfying in the end. I'm very happy with how the music has turned out. And we also were able, you know, since times have changed. The audio mixes have gotten more and more sophisticated. And we did this, our mix at Chase Deluxe in Hollywood on a big, beautiful stage and mixing stage. And it was really exciting to do this at Dolby 7.1. And, you know, it's all, now the sound is all around you. So if you see this movie in the theaters, it's going to be a much different experience than if you see it in VOD. So that's what's so great about Miramax wanting to give this film a festival life. And I'm very grateful for that. So that audiences can see it and hear it way.
The audio quality is astounding, actually. I mean, the other night, everybody was tapping their feet, you know, at some point of it.
Yeah.
And what was the when you knew you could do it, did you talk with the actors, the former actors? What were their feelings about that, about this movie to be rebirth.
Okay. Well, I think the best one is where Salma emailed me, OMG, three exclamation points. You know, I'm so excited. So that was the basic reaction from everyone. It feels like a miracle. You know, it's like a dream come true. So Miramax, really, I mean, there's such goodwill toward that company now in the filmmaking community. I think it's really exciting for all of us, I think.
You were telling me earlier that Ryan Phillippe has to record again his voice for the very first scene.
Right.
And so basically now he's actually the age that he was supposed to be in the in the movie, you know?
Yes. Right. Okay. So originally in the studio cut, he was a 22-year-old actor, you know, doing a voiceover, pretending to be 40 years old, doing a voiceover, looking back on being a very young man. But now when we redid it, we had this very unique opportunity to have a 40-year-old actor
actually
looking back on what it was to be a very young man. And it's very exciting. I don't know that that's ever happened in cinema history. If it has, someone please tell me. But people have commented to me that it's a little bit like Boyhood, because it's, you know, this actual experience that's happened over time. And, you know, Ryan and I loved doing that because you cannot imitate it. It's very subtle, but like you hear this grown man's voice, and then you cut to a scene where he's having sex with a girl outside the club, outside the little New Jersey club, and you hear that young, you know,
very young voice.
And then you go back into that deep, gravelly 40-year-old voice, and it's just, you know, it couldn't be imitated. It's really, really, I love it. Yeah.
Okay, thanks a lot, Mark. Thanks a lot for the movie. Thanks a lot for this opportunity to be dancing again to our music, because that is our time music, you know? Your growing up music and my growing up music as well. So thanks a lot. It was Mark Christopher, director of 54, the Director's Cut. I'm Angela Cherby for Fred Film Radio from the Berlinale 2015.
Fred Film Radio, 24/7 on fred.fm and smartphone apps.